You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to Psyched by MG. This is Mary Grace Randazzo Ratliff, or MG for short. I've been a psychotherapist in private practice for 32 years now. Guess what, everyone? We all have issues. So it's time to lighten up and move forward. Let's stop letting our crap control us and take control of our crap.
Hey, everybody.
What's going on, hey, people?
How are you?
Hello.
Good evening. Good evening. So, first things first. We want to let everyone know that they can find us on Spotify, Podcast Detroit, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Facebook, of course. Here we are, Facebook Television. And so we're just going to ask everyone, please, as you listen to this, wherever you listen to it, please subscribe, like us, give us a shout out and let us know what you're thinking. If you have any show ideas, of course, we say this at the beginning of every show, please tell us, because we take them very seriously. In the last few shows, actually the ideas came from users or listeners. And I have to say, first of all, that this last week, actually last 2 weeks, have been so freaking interesting.
that's a choice word.
Oh my God, Barbara. Truly. I mean, it was a part of why we're going to do this show, and this show is going to be dealing with people who get emotionally irresponsible in relationships and how in their lives, and they choose to do things that can hurt them, and how it affects the ones that love them. And I think this was such a good topic. I actually picked this one because of I'm just seeing it all over the place. And, you know, we've been talking about schools and, you know, them trying to do in person and, you know, how this affects teachers and students and how it has a ripple effect, you know, with this COVID and this pandemic still active. But I just heard today that Plymouth Canton Community Schools called it, and they're going to be all online through the year. And took the pressure off of all the parents, you know, needing to decide, do I send my children? Don't I send my children? And so I just want to thank them for their bravery and their ability to protect the kids, protect the teachers, protect the maintenance staff, protect all of those people who are connected to the schools. I mean, I really think that they did the right thing and they were courageous and brave in doing that. So I want to give a shout out to them because I really do appreciate them calling this the way they did. And I know we're going to get parents who are like, I wanted my kids to go back to school. And I get that too. You know, I get the desire to send your kids and to get relief and that they need structure. And as we talked about in the last podcast, when you're fatigued and you're tired and you need relief, it's very easy to go to a place of a bit of denial in regards to the seriousness of what's happening. I think one of the statistics today was we are now up to 1,000 deaths with COVID just each day.
Yeah, it's sorry to cut you off there, Mary Grace. I just want to give Ann Arbor Schools a big old shout out because once again, Ann Arbor Schools called it, everything is going to be online. They're going to start working with communities to see how they can take care of the worries that they had around children who were probably getting one meal a day and eating at school. They're going to probably continue what they did in the beginning of the pandemic when they shut down, which is continue to provide these kids with meals. What that's going to look like, I'm not sure, but it's been called. Something tells me that Michigan as a whole is going to call it. I just have that sense. And I hope so, because yesterday I actually did a live on this, and I was talking about statistics that I'd seen about, and you know, I'm a very international person, so I have people in different parts of the world, and how in Europe they are right now having a great time. Their summer starts, especially for the kids, usually starts in July. So early July, and then they have up until like mid-August, and the kids go back to school. And they were saying they are getting ready for the second wave. They're calling it the second wave of COVID. And we are not out of the first wave, because we never flattened our curve in this country. Okay. And so we are literally, I think the calling shutting schools is the best thing that could have happened. So, because in Europe, like I said, they had this window of time. Even the economy was allowed to pick up, because they did the right thing when they did the right thing. And so economies in Norway, Sweden, Denmark, even England, the UK, France, everybody is doing the most right now. Whatever it is they can do, whatever fun they can have, they're out there doing it. They don't have to wear masks anymore over there because their numbers are so low, but they do practice distancing. There's not a lot of hugging and kissing and so on going on. People are just being careful. But they have that freedom now because they shut down totally and did the right thing. So they know, though, that going into winter, they now have to get ready for the second wave.
Yep.
And they are forecasting another shutdown, and soon. Like, they're not going to wait for the numbers to spiral. We've seen that before. As soon as it starts, they're going to shut down, keep it down, and then resurface at a time where probably temperatures start getting warmer, because this thing is temperature sensitive. It is. They now know this. And so when things start to get warmer, then people can perhaps start, you know, coming out again. But that is the only way to deal with this virus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I said, the vaccine is problematic again, because, you know, the studies so far show that you do mount an immune response, but it wanes, and they've tried to boost it and it wanes still. And so it's not protective right now.
I know. I had a long talk with my daughter Tuesday, I think it was, and because she goes to the University of Michigan. She has an apartment, and she wants to go back. She's going to be 20. God, it sucks as a parent to not have control anymore over your kids' decisions.
Yep. Mine's going back too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It was a really, you know, it was a hard, I recognized, and I think I got in touch with how angry I am at the lack of leadership with this pandemic. And how reckless and irresponsible it was. And it threw parents and schools into such a tizzy where they're trying to deal with the problem. And it's not a problem we've ever dealt with before. And so I was telling my daughter, I'm so angry that we don't have the leadership just defining it and calling it, and that people's safety is the most important thing. Not one person or child should die. Period. Period. That life is valuable. And I was venting to her how just absolutely infuriated I am, that I understood her longing and her missing of friends, because we all miss our friends. We all miss going to the movies. We have these holes inside of us because of this pandemic. But there is a pandemic, and it's real. And I shared that I got 3 phone calls just recently from clients and people saying that their kids now have COVID in one day. That was the most I'd ever gotten in one day. What do I do? We don't know if they infected their grandparents. My child is crying and depressed because she's afraid she could kill her aunt, who's a cancer patient, and because she visited her without knowing she had COVID. So these poor I need people to really hear this. These kids are bearing the burden, who are facing, oh my God, I tested positive because so-and-so gave it to me. And I was with this person, elderly, at risk, and I'm afraid I'm going to kill him. Now just get that to absorb for a minute. And these kids are having panic attacks. When we talk about ripple effects, like get your head in the game here, or out of your damn ass, and understand emotionally and mentally, the effects of this are huge. It isn't just, oh, they can go back to school, they're not going to catch it. I mean, we had Jamie just, I can't remember if it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago, talking about him having two colleagues that are recovering from cancer. They're scared to death to go back and teach. Please, people, please, 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 think of the bigger picture. Go beyond yourself. My God, I have all the compassion in the world. I get it, parents. I know how hard the little ones, I get it. But there, you can empower yourself. There's plans you can make. But what I heard last week, I was just like, are you freaking? I had just gotten back from New York and got all these phone calls. And, you know, some of them were just like, you won't believe it. You, like, 15 kids got affected, all tested positive, and all of them now have to go and talk and tell people. One kid was talking about, I'm too scared to tell anyone. I'm too scared to
tell
anyone.
Oh, my gosh. Mom. Yeah, because now there's stigma around it, you know. It's the same thing in the days of HIV and the stigma around HIV infection. That was, of course, heightened because it was sexually transmitted. Yeah. God forbid that people should be having sex, right? Yeah. But this is stigmatized too now, where people are scared to say, I tested positive for COVID, because then it's like, and this is what we were in public health trying to avoid, because once something is stigmatized, people won't talk. Mm-hmm. Once something is stigmatized, people won't say, I got exposed because I found out so-and-so I was with at a party has COVID. Therefore, I'm going to go get tested just in case. People, especially young people, are tending to start to not talk about it anymore. And that's where we come into real danger.
Yeah. I mean, you know, teens struggle with this to begin with. You know, I got, you know, one a friend of mine was telling me about a teen story where the kid was so scared to tell because they weren't supposed to go out and they snuck out anyway. Yeah. And now they're terrified because they got the call that the kid that night was exposed to COVID. And luckily that kid had a parent who was a good investigator and said, you got to talk, like, there's something wrong with you. What is wrong with you? Because the kid was having panic attacks. And the kid finally shared and they said, we've got phone calls to make. Like, you were around this person in our family and you were around that person in our family. And so, you know, we need young people to get it. We need everyone to get it. Like, this is serious stuff. There were, you know, I was talking to a parent not too long ago, and she said, I want my kids to go back to school. The little ones' teachers want them to go back. And I said, get it straight. We all want you guys to go back to school. There's nobody that doesn't want anybody to go back to school, not go back to school. The problem is this. That teacher may have an elderly parent that lives in that house. That kid might not die, but have it and give it to that teacher who gives it to that parent that's living in that house.
Right.
You know this one, Barbara. You have two people living in your house right now.
Yeah, I have an 80-plus-year-old living in the house and one who's turning 70 tomorrow.
Yes.
So that's why I said I had already made up my mind that mine were going to be online and that if the online courses are insufficient, I was going to homeschool. That was already a done deal. Mm-hmm. However, it was so wonderful to hear that it's going to be online, which takes the burden off of how am I going to educate my kids off of me. But I was prepared to put all my activities on the back burner if that's what it took. Because again, I don't want to live with the idea, and neither do my kids, because they would know. It was one of them who brought it into the house and then something happens to the grandmas, okay? Yeah. That's not something you want to live with. Mm-hmm. And I think this issue of emotional responsibility is really important around mm-hmm. this particular thing, because I think that, again, as adults, I think we do really poorly at modeling good behaviors for our children. And I teach this too on my podcast to the young adults I mentor in a self-mastery series that I do. I talk about emotional intelligence and the idea that, you know, what your emotions are valid, they're neither right nor wrong. It is what happens once you feel those emotions. Do you react or do you respond? And give them some tools with which to sort of stay in their power when certain negative emotions particularly come up. And the problem we face, I think, in society is that we've stigmatized the shadow self. We stigmatize the negative emotions to the point that people don't feel like they can have those emotions like jealousy, like envy, like anger, and express that even in words. But what tends to happen when you repress emotions, you repress, 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 and then at the most inopportune time, you get an explosion. Mm-hmm. And right. So for me, when you talk about emotional responsibility, I'm literally saying, can the adults please show up as adults? Because I'm seeing, like I said before, and I'm going to keep saying it, and the people will probably get upset with me, I'm sick and tired of seeing adults out there performing like two-year-olds, throwing tantrums about wearing a mask. I swear, I said one day to somebody, if I catch one of these, I'll treat them like a two-year-old. I will pull them up by the scruff of their neck and give them a good shaking, because that is the behavior that we are modeling to young people out there. That's my freedom. I don't want to wear a mask. That carbon dioxide I'm breathing back in is going to kill me. I'm like, dude, you don't even know the science. How many parts per million are you breathing in that is going to poison you? Are you kidding me right now? But it's the hysteria around, it's just the hysteria that's been created around this idea of my personal freedom, my freedom. Well, if your personal freedom starts impinging on mine, we got a problem. And so you got to get emotionally responsible, because there are people out there who are not going to put up with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're confusing freedom from responsibility. You know, there was something around Facebook, and I shared it. It was an article that this person wrote that said, you know, you want us to respect your freedom to not wear a mask. It was a restaurant, and it was responding to people wanting to come in without a mask. And they said, okay, you know, we will respect that. And when the cook comes back from the bathroom, and if he decides not to wash his hands because he doesn't like hot water, then we must respect his freedom as an American that he can choose not to wash his hands before he cooks your chicken. And that same cook, if he, you know, read somewhere or saw on YouTube that chicken tastes better if it's cooked at 100 and if it gets to the cook temperature of 100 versus 165, well, he has the freedom to choose to only cook your chicken to 100 degrees.
And we as a restaurant can exercise our freedom to not let you into our space.
Yeah. Well, no, this cook was pointing out that, or this restaurateur was pointing out that, look, we have to follow so many rules to give you food, to keep you safe from E. coli, getting sick. And we don't get to change our minds about that. That isn't about freedom. That's about, we need to be responsible.
Responsibility, right.
To you, so that you stay safe while you eat in our restaurant. And I thought, wow, that they nailed it, because it isn't about freedom. It's about responsibility. And either you're a responsible person or you're not. And we're seeing some people twist freedom into, you know, it's not about responsibility, but it is. And it's something that is, I think, really been hard to watch, especially all of us who are so affected. Like, when we don't see someone wearing a mask when they should, I went to vote. And the old guy sitting there had his mask down below his nose.
Do you do what I do?
would you do? What would you do?
Excuse me, sir. Please put your mask on properly.
Well,
I cannot take it anymore. That's why I told you that one of these days you're going to see me in the newspaper holding somebody by the scruff.
I'm going to get the call. Would you please pick up your friend?
Please come and pick up your friend. Somebody come get this woman.
Force the mask over the nose. Pick her up now. Yes. Yes.
I'm done. I'm just done. I'm done. I'm at that level now. If somebody, and this is the thing, in a queue, you know, we've got the markings on the floor. You stand there and then you stand there, social distancing. Well, I had one guy 2 days ago at the grocery store. And he did the same thing. So I'm standing. Then he's right behind me, not on his box. And he's talking on the phone, and he had one of those masks that you can do. So he has the mask dangling, he's talking. You know what I did? I turned around and I said, like, back off. Move. There's your square over there. Go stand on your square. Do you know what he did? He literally looked so shocked. He backed up and he went and stood on his square. Like, I'm like, see, they need to be treated when they behave. Like 2-year-old, treat them like that and watch what happens.
That's right. Well,
but you gotta defend your freedom too.
I had screwed up my ballot. And I was called a spoiler because I didn't, they call it, they, oh, we have a spoiler here. We have a spoiler. I mean, everybody knew.
Talk about saving someone. A spoiler.
And I'm like, they won't take my ballot. You know, what did I do? And you're supposed to pick all party. And I thought I did, but I turned it over and apparently I did it wrong. And so they called me a spoiler. So I was so responding to being called a spoiler by one guy, because what happens is they say, oh, we have a spoiler. And they shout it to the other end of the gym. We have a spoiler. You have to walk over there. And the person on the computer goes, oh, to the guy in the back room, we have a spoiler. So the person has to come back and come to the thing and fix it. And I'm so finally, I just started saying, we have a spoiler, everyone. Spoiler. I was like, well, I got to make fun of this or I'm going to just die of embarrassment.
All right.
But yeah, oh, I was such a spoiler. And it was after they fixed the spoil that I looked over and I thought, oh my God, that guy over there doesn't have his mask over his freaking nose at the voting, during the time of voting. It was ridiculous. So I was peeved. Yeah.
And because you were a spoiler, you see, you didn't have a leg to stand on, right? You did not have a leg to stand on.
No.
You did not have...
No, and only one person was like, don't worry about it. And I'm like, man, I didn't mean to cause all this chaos. Like, everybody had to wait. So the line's getting bigger and bigger because everybody's got to wait because she did a spoiler vote. I didn't like it because they pulled out my spoiler vote and it was out sitting. So everyone saw how I voted.
Who cares? In this day and age, we all should be voting one way anyway. I'm sorry. Did I just say
True.
That? Oops, my bad.
Good point. But you know that the whole issue, I mean, we're talking about the pandemic, but it can go into so many areas for people emotionally where they're watching someone. The main thing is you're watching someone, especially someone that you love and care about, and they make a decision that you know is going to hurt them. And as somebody who loves that person, it causes so much distress and so much anxiety. And so the person who loves the person who's about to make the mistake or hurt themselves ends up having to take on the responsibility for the irresponsible person. And, you know, Dave and Matthew, we could talk a little systems theory here where, you know, if one part of the system goes down, the other one has to go up twice as high in order to make the system, it's called the homeostasis, get that system to a balance. And so for people who are stuck constantly in relationships, whether it's alcoholism, dealing with this pandemic, whether it's verbal, you know, watching somebody abuse someone, the person who watches it and goes, no, you can't do that. Don't do that. You're going to get hurt. Something's going to happen. Carries so much stress and feels so responsible for that person who's making those irresponsible choices, those emotionally irresponsible behaviors that you do hurts those people that love you. And it hurts terribly. I have a person in my family, and I won't mention his name, who has some health issues. And he's going to Florida for a vacation. And part of his health issues is breathing. He's like, oh, you're going to be so mad at me. And I'm like, it isn't about being mad. I'm scared and my heart hurts. Like, it hurts to watch you choose this. Like, and I have no control. None whatsoever. If you get this, this is damn serious for you. And I have to watch? God, that sucks. I'm sure all of us have been in that position where we watch somebody just choose. And as therapists, we see it a lot, unfortunately. And we just watch people do it. And it just, for the people who make these bad choices, I need them to get that this hurts the people that are around you. They're trying to be controlling. They're not trying to hurt you. They're hurting and anxious when they watch you make these decisions that put yourself at risk. It's a painful process for people who love you and care for you. And we have no control. None. We have to sit back and watch it. And we, and you know, Dave, Matthew, Barbara, you too, with what you do, we watch people go down. It's a part of our jobs. And I don't know about Matthew and Dave, but with clients, I will say, you know what? All I can do is just say, ooh, warning, if you make that choice, I'm going to be here for you. But if you make that choice, ooh, it's hard to watch.
Well, I think, too, though, going back to just the pure pragmatism of the language. So linguistically, right, what does responsible mean, right? Responsible, and what does it connote to people, right? So when we're thinking of responsibility, it connotes a sense of reliability, a sense of trustworthiness. Mm-hmm. And so when that boundary, right, of reliability and the boundary of trustworthiness is violated, right, and we often don't see it, such extreme measures taken if it's violated once, but if it's continually and habitually violated, which is what we're talking about, which then escalates to from a problem being into something that's destructive. And I think also, too, linguistically speaking, responsibility means, right, it's literally the quality or state of someone being able to be morally, legally, and mentally accountable.
Yeah.
And if you can't pass that litmus test, and oftentimes it doesn't, especially working in the incarceral system and in kind of working in my work experience, there's an absence of one or two or even all of those, right? Is it morally, ethically, or legally sometimes? But the responsibility of, well, what is morality? And a lot of times people work their way back from amorality as opposed to trying to define and refine what morality can mean and imply, what legality can mean and imply, and what does it mean to be accountable, right? And there was these kind of unwritten philosophies that I used to talk with prisoners and, you know, individuals in residential community mental health. And I would say, well, what are you doing to be your brother's and sister's keeper? And what's the importance of role modeling, right? And I would give them these homework assignments. And just like you just said, is that, you know, it's interesting when, you know, patients will say, but just even friends too and family, where, you know, they want to then redirect and take out, right, that classic displacement, defense mechanism of displacement, and they want to kick the dog. And we as professionals, academia, right, therapists, we become targets at times. And to some degree, we know that. But on some level, then we also have to model back to them what a healthy boundary is. Mm-hmm. No, you will not talk to me like that. Or no, you should not talk to that person that way. Oh, well, you just don't understand me. no, we haven't gotten to the part where I can understand you, because we have to get you back to the morality. We have to get you back to the reliability. We have to get you back to the trustworthiness, right? Right. Your boundaries are broken or frail, and we have to build that up. We need you to take some calcium for your psychic ability to actually get stronger. So there's some calcification there. And then you're able to notice that you don't have to take out all this rage and hostility and anger and hate onto other people, right? And I've had so many examples, especially given during this time. And I've spoken about this recently in the past few weeks about this kind of vacuum that we've been existing in with the global pandemic. But we all know too, though, right? Intellectually, we know life is not in a vacuum.
Right.
And so it presents this conundrum for all of us, because we really are asking those proverbial questions. Who am I now? What do I do with my life? No matter what class, no matter what race, no matter what age, no matter what gender, right? When you have over 30 million people filing for unemployment, guess what, sisters and brothers? We're all struggling. And it doesn't matter what you're doing in your life. It matters. It really, I mean, this is a representation, and it's also looking at it from more of an empathic stance, and I guess it's also a choice too, is what I'm also getting at, is we can use this as a choice to actually get us back on track and not be as frail and derailed from the morality and the trustworthiness and that reliability. So when someone is angry, say, I don't appreciate that, but I understand that you're angry. Maybe we can talk about this another time, right? But because we also have to have our own boundaries as well, right? And we've talked about that before too, where that's kind of like that gaslighting. Someone, you know, and then you start thinking you're paranoid because you're like, wait a minute, someone just screamed at me, but then now I'm the one who's the perpetrator. It's like, no, that's not the case, right? But there's so much energy that people don't know where to put it. So it's just coming out in so many different ways. And a lot of it is hurtful. And it is actually tearing relationships apart.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean,
speaking of just the emotional part of it, too. I swear, I just had a client last night, the last client of the day, and in a relationship that had broken up and because of a big fight. So, and this is why I said, sometimes it takes a crisis to fix something because you weren't acknowledging the issues before. You had to have something to force you into making change. And unfortunately, you know, with clients, we'd like them to choose before that happens. But honestly, most people are so complacent, unless they're forced to do it, they don't change.
Right.
Well, and I think based on that too is, you know, and I've been also processing, and I'm going to, permission to be vulnerable, as Barbara says, I'm going to be vulnerable here and exude some humility. You know, I've even been thinking about what has my identity been predicated on? Like, what have I done? And what has this crisis and this pandemic, right? And however we are able to have that choice to define it, where do I need to go now? And what have I not recognized up until this point about myself, right? And I think that's part of it is, and, you know, Mary Grace, we've talked about this, Dave and Barbara in the previous, you know, we have to do our own work, right? Mm-hmm. To be walking healers, right, as I often say, or spiritual walkers, right? So even touching to those users and or users. I just said what you said, Mary Grace, those listeners.
Listener.
Right? To touch those listeners who are listening right now is that, you know, for the ones who are more spiritually grounded and think more spiritually and feel more spiritually, it's the same thing. It's like when you're in that spiritual walker, how do you get that? It's like you have to recognize your own humbleness, right? You have to, and that own open-mindedness, right? So again, looking at it, I think from the simplicity of the language sometimes is so beautiful because it doesn't need an adjective, right? It doesn't need this kind of verbosity around, you know, and I'm being facetious in that, you know, kind of in that sense of using a big word to have a play on words, but it can be so simple as, you know, when, and I love when patients even say, I'm mad, right? Mm-hmm. I had a, you know, a patient saying, you know, like, you know, I'm mad right now. And I'm like, it's so simple, but so beautiful. Right. What are you mad about? Where is that coming from? And mm-hmm. where, what hurt has crept up and where is that coming from? Right. Yes. What has fallen off the beaten path of morality, of legality, and being mentally accountable? Right. And I think when people can recognize that, you know, there's a shift, right? Tectonically, there's this shift in their thinking and the way they live. And, you know, but it's a choice. It's recognizing the beauty in having that control. And I think also, too, just looking at it from the perspective of, and with my experience in the working in the incarceral system, is that, you know, the system only becomes a system and continues to be a system if you treat it like a system. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have to view that, and you don't, and you yourself as the healer and the spiritual walker and the person who's there to serve can be humble enough to recognize that you can get out of your own way,
yeah,
then somebody can realize and recognize what they need to do, not what they feel they need to do for you.
Right.
And I think that's part of that emotional irresponsibility in relationships, is that so many people are doing things based on what they feel they should do for the other person, as opposed to sometimes just even that. And one of my colleagues was talking to me about the kind of the beauty of no, right? Again, mm-hmm. the simplicity. And it's like, if you say no and practice, and I am practicing this. This was my homework. We both gave each other homework. And even if you're standing in line and someone says, can you move over? And you have to say no. And I want, and all of us to practice. And he was talking about how, like, you know, the legs were kind of buckling and shaking because we're not used to that. We're just used to kind of going with the flow. And so I think part of it is knowing and recognizing, you know, the matters that leave the heart can reach the heart. So if, let's say, Barbara, you ask me a question and I say no, and you say, okay, that's that emotional empathy and that emotional sobriety, right? You're not feeding it with an explosion and saying, you must do this, because no, there's understanding there. There's emotional awareness there of not only your needs, but also my needs as well.
Right. And I think that's so well put, Matthew. And I think, you know, we're talking about dealing with people who make choices that hurt them, and how hard that is on the people who love them. Because mm-hmm. the person that makes choices that hurt them, whether it's drinking, whether it's, you know, doing any kind of dangerous behavior, whether it's, you know, going to Florida during a pandemic with a health problem, whatever it is, the people who love you, it's painful to watch. And I say to adults a lot, you know, being a grown-up is not a choice, especially when it's a situation that is connected to other people. You don't get to say, I don't feel like picking the kids up. I don't feel like feeding the two-year-old. I'm tired today. It's not a choice. There's certain things in relationships that as you grow up and mature and get older, that you are expected and need to do and respect.
Yeah.
And when you choose to do something, especially a choice that's going to hurt you, well, you have to recognize you're a bit detached. Because you're not making a good choice. You're making a blatantly bad choice. And you're rolling the dice. And just because you're in that space of being detached or making a bad choice, the key thing to know is, don't get it twisted. Don't, when somebody decides to step up to the plate and say, I'm really scared and I'm worried about you, I don't want you to drive, I don't want you to you know, I don't want you to go to Florida. I don't want you. That because you're in your space, don't flip it around. Try not to flip it around because the people are trying to love you. So often we will talk to the person who is trying to save and take care of the person. And we will teach them boundaries and teach them limits. But I today want to speak specifically to those people that make fucked up choices. And I want them to try to hear that when you make those choices, when we love you, it hurts. And it's hard to watch. So please try to absorb that because it's unfortunate. Now, the people who watch this, you know, it's tough because we don't have any control. If they're another adult, we don't have control. We can't make decisions for them. And we have to understand that there's just some grief. When you don't have control and you watch somebody choose to hurt themselves, it's very painful. And that you have to then think about yourself. How are you going to take care of yourself?
Yeah.
What are you going to do for you? Because if you can't keep watch, if it's something that's really hard to watch, you got to start to figure out like what space do I need so that I don't get ripped apart by this and not attempt to keep saving. If it's another adult, you cannot save them.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say this, Mary Grace, because I think of a situation of, gosh, this is so bizarre. It just came to me. I used to have a friend when I was in college. This was when I was in Baltimore, Maryland. And she always used to say, my mother is always sick. My mother is always sick. And so, because I remember asking her, you're 27, you're still staying at home. She's like, yeah, stay with my mom. And even when we went out as a group, we would say, you know what, did you want to come out with us? And she'd be like, no, I need to stay home with my mom. Mm. I mean, I'm not a therapist. But I visited her in her home with her mom once. And, you know, I'm spiritual. Let me tell you, I see things so clearly. And sometimes I don't want to see what I see because sometimes I'm like, there's none of my business. Can we just stop? Please leave me alone. But what I saw was a mother. And I'm not going to say she wasn't sick. That's not my place to say that. But if she was sick, she was using it as a way to keep this girl, her only child. She had no other relationship. She, you know, she was a single mom with this girl at home. And so there was almost like a pattern in her behavior. Talk about the most sort of almost sadistic emotional type of blackmail is what I witnessed.
Emotional hijacking.
Yeah. So what she would do is, I remember going in with her once and saying, you know what, let me ask your mom for you. And I'll tell her that we will make sure you come home in an hour. We went in. The mom was fine. She didn't know we were coming to ask for anything. Oh, I'm doing okay, getting better, getting there. And so we sat down and I said, Rebecca, I just wanted to ask if we could take Grace out with us tonight. I promise you, we will make sure she's back in an hour. I will bring her home myself. We just feel like it'd be so nice to just be out with her. We adore her. And we, you know, it's always school, home for her. It's 27-year-old. Do you know what? The mom was like, she looked at her daughter as if to say, how dare you? Like, really? Like, and then she's like, yeah, well, I mean, that's okay. That's okay. So we kind of tarried because I was like, let's visit with her a little bit before we leave her. Because now she's, my friend, is feeling guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I said, okay, well, let's tarry. Let's stay with her. Let's visit with her for a little bit. Do you know, in the time we were there, the half an hour we were there, this woman developed a migraine.
Mm.
And she was laid up in bed going, at which point Grace says, you guys, I really can't come with you. You know, mom's got a migraine.
Yeah, hi, Jen.
And she's, you know what? And I walked out of there convinced. At first, I was like, you're so mean, Barbara. But, you know, I never, ever doubt my gut. But I walked out of there thinking that is some BS I just saw in there. Some serious BS. And I kept thinking this idea of emotional responsibility. And I'm like, does this woman even love her daughter? Why would you do that to someone you love? For your own selfish gains, you're going to play out this illness you have, which, like I said, if you have it at all, as a way to keep her trapped.
Control. To control.
But again, this is this emotional irresponsibility and parents saying to their kids, you go out and do this Black Lives Matter, I disown you, and I'm disinheriting you. And then hurling all kinds of slurs at these kids, you know, like you end lover, you whatever. And I'm like, that is the height for me of emotional irresponsibility. Disinherit the kid if you want. Kick her out if you want. But why are you going to throw out these awful things that she's going to have to hear reverberating in her spirits for the rest of her life?
So, Dave and Matthew, when you look at this mom who emotionally hijacked daughter, what do we call that person?
I was going to say, I don't want to really say it out loud.
I didn't have the
it's
word
the borderline.
Listen, I was a village girl from Zimbabwe. I didn't know borderline, over the line, in the border, under the border. I didn't know any of those things. Border walls, nothing. Okay,
so for me, it was like, that's something.
But I knew to call it. I felt it. I was like, that
they emotionally hijack. They gaslight. Uh-huh. They do the illness thing. I had a dear friend who was trying to get away from a borderline spouse. And as you gain strength and as you are no longer submissive and complacent and you stop serving them, they will escalate. They'll escalate. And if they like to sit on the physical side of things, they will suddenly end up in an ER. They'll threaten suicide. They'll up the ante to get you back to serve them and back in control. And so I had told this very, very dear person, I said, now you have set serious limits. It's been a few months in setting the limits. She's going to up it. But if she ends up in an ER, do not go. No matter what, do not go. Hear me saying to you, oh my God, she's going to pull a manipulative thing on this last leg of your divorce. She's going to do this. And I got a call about a week and a half later. And he said, oh my God, I'm on my way to the emergency room. She's, you know, she might be diagnosed with this, you know, terrible illness. They could amputate her leg. And I said, oh my God, dude, don't go. Don't go. Do you remember I told you she's going to pull this? He said, well, what if they amputate her leg? I said, she just had a coffee with her sister this morning. How is she going with coffee with her sister to an possible amputation in the hospital, calling everyone to take care of her? I said, what's going to happen if you go? You're going to get manipulated. And the doctor's going to say, it's a mystery. We cannot find what is causing the leg pain. And he's like, I would feel terrible not to go. And she just ripped at every, you know, compassionate heartstring he had. And he went. And then he called me up. It was hours he was there. I said, you're going to get hijacked. I said, and she's going to keep you there for hours. You're going to get fatigued. Then she can control you. This is what they do. And he called me like the next day. And I said, so what's your diagnosis? I'm just curious. He goes, well, it's a mystery. They haven't figured it out.
And I said, sorry for laughing.
They haven't figured it out because she's a borderline. Borderlines are famous for this.
This is that every time you say it's a mystery, I have a vision of this nun at school, this Catholic nun who, for everything, I used to ask really tough religious questions. And for everything, she would go, yeah, Baba, it is a mystery.
Yep, it
was German. So she had this German accent. Yes. Every time you say it, I laugh because I just remember the mystery. It is a mystery.
The key to know when you get manipulated by a borderline, they can't bond with people. They cannot bond with people. It really is about they see you as someone that is there to serve them. Mm. They are the center of the universe, and their level and their ability to manipulate somebody into guilt and to feeling bad so that they will serve them, they're masterful at it.
So if you have a codependent and a borderline, that's disastrous.
Oh yeah. Jesus.
Oh, yeah. And that's how
like, that's like total disaster, because I can see, like, I'm listening to you and I know what codependency is.
Yes.
And I had some of that, you know. Yes. It is that thing where you literally will shortchange yourself over and over and over again.
Yes.
In order to make other people comfortable, to make other people happy, to the point where, like, even financially, I would empty my bank account to help my cousin in Zimbabwe because she said she didn't have rent money for the kids. And then survivor's guilt would kick in and say, here, I'm living like this. She's got no rent money. And I would give away money that I would otherwise have needed for something. But I deemed it a lesser need than the need to pay rent somewhere. Not healthy at all. So I'm like, okay, so if somebody who's codependent like that would be in the clutches of a borderline, it's over.
Well, you know, Dave, Matthew, and I, you know, it took us, you know, several years to master the borderline personality disorder. And now, you know, I can tell when I have one, because they always have an excuse not to do whatever you tell them they need to do. And they don't take responsibility for the problems that they have. Everybody else makes them do it. It's everybody else's fault. And if I get a chart that looks like, oh, this is the borderline, lots of therapists, I say to them, you know, if you struggle with suicidality, I don't want you to call me. If you really think you're suicidal, you are to just call 911 and get strapped on the gurney. Just get strapped on the gurney. Do not manipulate me. And you know, usually if their partner is there, they're looking at me like, wow, you're cold. And then I look at the partner and I say, if she starts pulling that shit or he starts pulling that shit, you call 911. You absolutely set the limit and do not get hijacked by somebody. And if they are truly suicidal, you are not the professional. They have to be dealt with by professionals. You cannot, if they got a huge deep cut, you're not going to go in there and suture it. It's the same thing. So when you get somebody who especially pulls the suicidality card, if they've done it several times, it can be used in a manipulative way. Not everyone is like this, but someone who does this and manipulates people and pulls in the heartstrings and gets you back to taking care of them, you have to understand that if they do that, you need to just tell them that they're going to get 911, a phone call. And this one particular person that I had years ago, sure enough, tried it. And the partner said, oh my God, you know, she's saying she's going to kill herself. I said, what are you doing calling me? Hang up the phone, call 911. And she's like, oh, but she doesn't want to go. I go, oh, no, she doesn't want to go. It's not a choice. You threaten that. And we take it seriously. And it's very clear cut. We don't play games. Put her on a gurney. Get her on a gurney and call 911.
I was going to say, I also have had similar experiences. And then I followed it up with, and this has happened, where I'll say, and this is where it's so liberating, is that, like you said, when you're kind of mastering yourself and you have that ability where you say, I'm not the therapist for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I can help you.
That's
okay. This is about you getting the help that you need, and I'm not the person who can help you.
Yeah, that's right. Partners can't be therapists.
Mm-hmm.
Partners cannot be mothers and fathers. They can't. And they need a limit. If they are a true borderline and narcissistic, they need a limit.
And I think even if you're a therapist and you find yourself in the clutches of, I mean, I mentor, like I said, and you know, I work with a lot of these skills. I have no problem when I recognize that I'm dealing with somebody who is so narcissistic that you come to me for coaching and then you proceed to want to tell me how to do my job. I don't have a problem at all saying, you know what, honey? I'm not the one for you.
Not the one for you.
You need to find yourself a good fit. We're not a good fit. Because what I now refuse to do in my life is to have people make me feel some type of way. It's already stressful enough out in the streets. In my workspace and my environment, I want to work in a nurturing manner because I'm a nurturer. But at the same time, I'm not going to have someone try to pull the wool over my eyes because this is why, you know, I am very, everybody who knows Coach B knows and says, she's all fuzzy when she's not coach, but when the coach chat goes on, she's not any kind of fuzzy. And if you don't follow through with what I ask of you once, okay, I'll take the juice twice. Third time, it's see ya.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we have to also learn to set boundaries so that, especially for me working with young people, I need them to understand this thing of emotional responsibility and self-mastery, and that they do not live in a vacuum, that they actually do live and function in a world with other people. Mm-hmm. And that just because they pay me or the parents pay me or whatever, I take your money and go elsewhere. My peace of mind is a priority. My sense of well-being is a priority, not just because of me, but for the others I need to take care of. And so that's where the ripple effect of emotional responsibility comes in. It's not just the people who are directly with you in your home when you're irresponsible, or the people who come to your practice and then you mess with this therapist. That therapist has thousands of other people to see who could get messed up because you're messing with them. Mm-hmm. And that's where I get responsible too, in that I have other people. You're not the only person, you know, because some of them try to treat you like, you know what, they're the only thing next to sliced bread. And for me, it's like, no, you're not, honey. There are 500 like you who need me straight after this. So
yes,
we can't keep doing this. You're going to need to find someone else to do this.
And I think you hit it perfectly. I mean, it really is, you know, for those that are codependent, for those who have really big hearts, for those people that don't have strong selves and believe that their value is based only on serving other people, you have to know there's a real problem with that, because you don't help the problem person. You really don't. You get used, you get mistreated, but the actual problem does not get better.
And that says more about the person who's doing that. If you get used, it's actually saying something more about you, because you have to have that courage to be vulnerable enough to set those limits.
That's right.
I think even just, you know, like, obviously the show's coming to an end tonight, but just for like the listeners to understand too, and you guys were talking about in a previous, you know, your previous podcast about denial, and that's part of like the emotional responsibility and the, you know, having the codependency and the, you know, the things that we were talking about tonight. A lot of it exists and continues because denial. It's like, it can be a tenable task, but it's still nevertheless a task that if more of us did it, it's like when people say one person, how can one person make a difference? Because it's one person. And that one person does make a difference. And then imagine if millions of one people made a difference, right? And I think that's part of it, being more responsible. If a million one persons and 300 million one persons made a difference to be more responsible, imagine what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's the best way to close tonight. I mean, I think that was very well put. So we really hope everyone who's listening absorbs this. And if you are somebody who feels codependent, there's a great book called Codependent No More. There's good books on Amazon about boundaries, if you need to understand about boundaries. For people who can be emotionally irresponsible, I hope you absorb what we're telling you. Like, really get on the other side and understand that you really are hurting people when you make risky decisions. It's very, very difficult. And you can call a therapist. Like, get a hold of somebody. Take a look at this stuff.
Hurt people.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then real quick, next week we have Lisa Bunnage. She's a parenting coach. She's been a parenting coach for 40 years. She did a TED Talk on the hookup culture. And we are going to do a podcast next Friday on the hookup culture. So I really want anybody who's young to be listening to this, anybody who has, you know, young adults, as kids to really recommend this next podcast. She did a fantastic TED Talk on this. She's a strong personality, Lisa. So I think it's going to be a great show. But I do want to give her a plug. And if you're curious about her, you can find her at bratbusters.com. And that's her website. So we're going to be talking to Lisa next week. And I think that hopefully the show will really get people thinking and talking. And please comment, subscribe, like us on, you know, all the different podcasts, Detroit, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and Facebook. And other than that, we wish you all well, and we'll be talking to you next week at the same time.
Have a great weekend.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Be safe.